In today's arts, I talked to artist and editor Carrie Patterson about the first English language edition of a rare and fascinating book that was first published in 1936. It was written by the third wife of modernist architect Adolf Loos, and she was Claire Beck Loos, or Klara Beckova Loosova of Pilsen. Until recently only available in German, the new edition is called Adolf Loos, A Private Portrait, and is published by Doppelhaus Press. Loos died in 1933, and Beck, who was Jewish, died tragically in the Holocaust after being deported to Terezin. Now, the book is a rare glimpse of Mr. Loos at the height and fall of his career, also of their unusual marriage. She was 34 years his junior, and its revealing of Claire Beck herself as an inspiring artist. For Carrie Patterson, this was also an intensely personal project. She is Claire Beck's grandniece. Now, when we spoke on a line to her home in California this week, the first thing Carrie Patterson discussed was the history of the book.
It was published first in 1936 in Vienna, and then it has seen two reprints there in 1985 and then recently in 2007.
Is it fair to say that in the German language, at least until fairly recently, it was part of the canon on literature about Loos as an architect?
I think, actually, it's interesting that you asked that question. It was not in the canon because it was an obscure book by a Jewish author. A lot of the books disappeared. At this point in our research about Claire's past and her tragic death, we understand that she tried to send a number of books out of Prague in 1941, but they never made it to the United States. So I believe a lot of her books were actually destroyed. What this means is that the book, while it had been collected in a certain amount amongst the Viennese and probably in the Czech Republic as well, very few of those copies can be found today.
When you got involved in this project, it was really like unraveling a thread to a degree. You must have been sorting through a lot of older material, researching in archives, that sort of thing.
Yes, our family had a number of things in our archive, and we have been in a bit of a treasure hunt, actually, over the last, I would say, 5 years, looking into her letters, into photographs that we now understand were taken by her, as Claire was a professional photographer, and trying to understand what happened in 1938 to 1941 when she was deported to Terezin at the end of 1941. So we have letters of hers, and we've learned a lot along the way having those translated, but we had a number of those things that just kind of laid quiet in our archives for typical emotional and personal reasons. They had not been looked into much by my father. So we did do a lot of research, and from that, this extraordinary book emerged, and I am so very happy to have been able to meet Claire in this way and to know her. She was an extraordinary person and a wonderful artist and wonderful writer.
If we start at the beginning, how did Claire actually meet Adolf Loos?
Claire met Adolf Loos when she was a young woman in her own apartment, which was designed by Adolf Loos in 1909. She was the daughter of industrialists, and her father, Otto Beck, was quite known in Pilsen. He was part of the Beck and Hirsch steel and wire manufactory. And Otto had learned about Loos early in his life as a businessman and was enamored of his architecture. And as soon as he could, he contracted Loos to do the interior remodel of his apartment. So with the Becks being clients, Loos was over at the house a lot, and that was when he first met Claire. But they re-met each other sometime when she was in her 20s, what is believed to be when she was in Paris doing some artistic experimentation, I guess you could say, with a sort of bohemian art circle there. At least that's according to research that's done by Adolf Opel, the editor of the 1985 edition. So they re-met each other there, and one might imagine that Loos was cavorting around with his other clients like Tristan Zara and may have run into her. And he also went to a performance of Josephine Baker with the Beck family, and I think that was the beginning of their courtship.
Was this a likely courtship or a likely marriage, given, for example, the different backgrounds of, say, Loos and Claire, and also the age difference?
Well, I think the age difference is the most significant thing. They were 34 years apart, but their characters seem to be part of a pattern, I think, that's known in history, where you have an older man who becomes a kind of mentor to a young artist, male or female. And in this case, it seemed very much that Claire was willing to go through what she did with him. He was not an easy man to live with. But she did that in part because of what he offered her about the world. And she was totally struck by his genius, by his way of seeing things, and I think learned quite a lot in those couple short years that they were married. So in that sense, I think it's unlikely and likely at the same time.
Certainly, you get a sense of the awe with which she saw him at the beginning through some of the vignettes. What was her own relationship with his architecture, either the interior designs or the buildings themselves?
Well, I think when a person grows up in a certain kind of architecture, and I can attest to this, having grown up in a house designed by an architect, my father is an architect who studied with Frank Lloyd Wright, that one absorbs the kind of aesthetic and the spatial awareness of being in that environment and forms happy memories there. And the childhood memories of space can be then seen in other works. So there's a natural affinity and a kind of feeling at home in other spaces that are similar to that. So I think in that sense, she did know him way before they actually started courting.
Open space was something that was, I guess, a very central concept to his work, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, the Beck apartment is like many of the apartments that he did in Pilsen for what were, on the whole, wealthy Jewish industrialists in that city. In those apartments, you can stand at one end and look all the way through to the other side, so that the spaces and the areas of living kind of fold into one another, and there's a sense of continuity in the space. Not only is it very modern, but Loos opened up spaces that didn't exist before in the apartments. And I just learned this through a lecture that was given by Dr. Irena Murray, the director of the British Architectural Library at the Royal Institute of British Architects in London. Loos would go into these apartments and open up interstitial spaces. In between one room and another, there might have been a dead space that just got closed in by the framing and was never used in the apartment. And by Loos taking out these interior walls, he found areas that weren't used and really didn't exist before.
One of the vignettes in the book that also dwells strongly on the sense of space and kind of central or key parts of the apartment, of course, is the one that is highlighted right on the jacket, the shimmering fish. Could we talk a little bit about that?
That's a great story to talk about because it does take place in the Villa Müller, which everybody in your audience is probably familiar with in Prague. He goes into the house when it is not finished at all. It exists in the framing pretty much only. And he has already at that point a complete vision of what the space will be like and how people will live there. And as he describes that out loud to people, his workmen and the client himself, they're all there and they cannot make that jump with him. So Loos loses himself in this description. And what Claire is able to record is something very essential that we know about Loos now. He pre-visioned these spaces. He didn't develop them sitting at a drafting table. He had them entirely in his mind as one unit, and then drew them often on backs of envelopes and napkins in coffee houses, and then worked out the engineering details with professionals in that arena. So that episode specifically, Loos walks into the house, and he can see fish tanks, and he can see where František Müller will come in at the end of a long, hard day and sit by the fireplace and relax and be surrounded by these shimmering fish and create a sense of otherworldly existence.
Let's discuss the book itself. It's not only fascinating in terms of the contents, of course, but also the form.
Yes, Claire chose to write her book as a personal narrative of her life with Loos. And she, although she does arrange it somewhat chronologically, what she's able to do is create a series of really what are snapshots of his life toward the end of his most productive period into his grave illness toward the end of his life. And she's able to track his personality, his architectural intentions, his environment, his milieu, the people that supported him, his critiques. All of these things are woven together. And she does this just so beautifully and simply in clear, imagistic language. You can see that she's using her photographer's eye every time she looks at him in one of these texts.
That's nicely said, and sort of leads into a question that I had about how revealing is the book of her as a person and as an artist.
I'm not sure how much of this was intentional, but I think the book is clearly also an autobiography of this time. I mean, it had to have been somewhat intentional because she includes her own reactions to certain things that were happening around her. And one of the things that struck me was how awkward initially she felt in certain circumstances that Loos himself felt absolutely at home, and how much he kind of walked into the world open and willing to face whatever was there. And for her, as a younger woman, she could really sense the barriers that were there for her and things that were internal limitations, but also external. She functioned as his secretary and his emissary in several situations, a lot of times because he was too ill to go places and meet people. But she found herself in situations meeting people, dignitaries and artists alike, that she never would have had access to. And so she really had to rise to those occasions. And you see her throughout the book developing into a very confident person who is a very good representative for Loos and all of what he stands for. So I think in that sense, it's a very interesting portrayal of what happens to a young woman through the course of this kind of mentorship, erotic connection to an older man.
A lot of these episodes are quite humorous as well, aren't they?
Yes, I think they are. They're filled with a sense of Loos's character as he approaches people. One of my favorite stories is when Claire goes to meet Matisse in the south of France, and she is there specifically to get him to sign a petition to start a Loosian school of architecture. And she enters into Matisse's space. The story is rather short, but it describes the environment that Matisse lived in just a wonderful way, with the clear white spaces, the open spaces, and the sense of the light in Matisse's studio. And Matisse turns her down. But what you get a sense of is how that relationship between Loos and the famous people of his environment had to be channeled through her, and maybe what that risked for him, but how willing he was to do that.
If we look at their marriage, it was a very brief one. On what terms did the marriage end?
Well, it's not entirely clear in the book, but we have a sense that there was a big fight, that Loos was almost out of his mind with jealousy and rage at one of his former students, who turns out to be Kriegerbeck, taking on one of his clients as his own. And he cannot bear this thought that he would be outdone by someone that he taught. He flies into a rage, and Claire bears some of this and is accused of betraying him, and she walks out and she leaves him. And she's very hurt by this. And the result of it is Loos is devastated, and so is she. And when she tries to go back and repair it, because she really did love him very much, he won't take her back. He's of that mind that once he's been shamed in that sense, that he would never go through that again. So up until the end of his life, however, she retained some kind of extraordinary affection for him and even saw him very close to the time where he died. And it seems very clear in the book that it was mutual, this kind of eternal love.